We are in the middle of Mishlei. We're in Perek Chav Zayin. Thank you to Sarah Morris for sponsoring tonight's Batei Medrash classes. Le'ilei Nishmas, her grandmother, Bertha Ribiet. I don't know her Hebrew name, but Mirza Hashem, her neshama should have an aliyah. We are up to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Some interesting psukim today. They're always interesting. But specifically tonight, as we've seen recently, the psukim are getting shorter. And the way to explain them is therefore getting harder. We are in a high Steve. We're up to Chav Zayin Yud Aleph 27:11 in Mishlei. Okay, Shlomo Melch tells us Chacham bini v'samach libi. Honestly, I don't really fully relate to this pasuk. I will say that to you. Bluntly, Chacham Bini means, at least according to Rashi, Hitzchakem, become wiser, my son. And if you become wiser, V'samach libi, then I will be joyful. So the reason why I don't relate to it is, you know, that some people aren't cut out for wisdom. That doesn't mean that they can't be wise in their own way. But I think sometimes we look at wisdom almost as like a fixed quality. You either have it or you don't have it. You have an IQ or you don't have an IQ. So if we were to interpret chachma, if we were going to interpret wisdom in that way, so then I don't relate to the pasuk. I think chacham bini really, really, you know, truly means, you know, strive to be wiser in whatever way it is. For each and every person, they can be wiser than they are. And the end of the pasuk, which is also a little difficult to relate to. So Shlomo Melech says, if you become wiser, then I will be joyful. And then, v'ashiva chorfi davar. V'ashiva chorfi davar means I will be able to respond. What does Rashi say it? No. The Mitzudas David says, Kein amar Shlomo libno. This is what Shlomo said to his son. It's unclear exactly. At this point, if you remember a few prakim ago, we talked about how there was a shift in Mishlei, that some of these aren't really from directly Shlomo HaMelech, but rather from his students that compiled it, or other Rabbanim that compiled it. So at least we're attributing this to Shlomo. I'm not sure if Shlomo said it himself. That's when I think Rabbeinu Yonah stopped talking. If you remember, Rabbeinu Yonah had a lot to say until about Perek Chaf Hei. So that's... Yeah, I think that was the end of it. Since Chaf Hei, we've basically been without Rabbeinu Yonah, which means that there's a different quality of this book. It could be that he didn't even have the text of the last six chapters or whatever it is. So says Mitzvah David. So we're claiming that this is what Shlomo said to his son. Hitzchakem b'ni v'samach levavi. V'och v'uchal, and I will be able lahashiv b'dabar cherfa l'asher yacharfani. I will be able to respond to those who have shamed me. Because if you were a fool, bal karchi asim yad lepe, against my will, I'll have to stay silent. I'll be fearful to reveal your blemishes. Basically, son, if you don't get your act together, what am I going to say to everybody? So it's a hard one. It's a tough one for me. Yeah. I think in a way, this is not so much, well, this is going to sound like apologetics. And it is, because the pshat of it doesn't sit well with me. And you know, I think that's probably a fault in me in understanding it properly. But I think one way to look at it is, as Rashi often does, but doesn't hear, you look at it in the sense that trying to make a parent proud. You know, we all have that feeling. And I think maybe this pasuk is from the perspective of the child, not necessarily. I know the father is speaking, right? Shlomo Melech says, Chacham bini v'samach libi v'ashiva chorfi davar. Even if maybe the parent shouldn't have that perspective, the child is encouraged by thinking of their parent in that way, right? Thinking of their parent being proud of them among other people sort of encourage the child to get his act together.
Very frustrated at some point with a child who shows no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking chachma here in the sense
mm-hmm.
of good sense, of good right. judgment. And so if you have an idiot son like Rechavam, who's going okay. to be a disaster because he has no good judgment,
right.
you know, you're frustrated.
If we were just looking at the first half of the pasuk, I'm with you 100%. The first half of the pasuk, Chacham b'ni v'samach libi, that one I can understand. I can get behind that. We have to really understand what Chachma is. It's really the seeking out of Chachma, not being smart, but trying to be smart. The second half of the part pasuk is talking about, what am I going to say to those who shame me?
So here, I'm going to just let my imagination run.
Okay, go ahead. And that's what we do here.
Shlomo HaMelech's advisors are saying to him,
yeah,
late in life, let's say late in
okay.
life. Actually, though, I think there's something about Kohelet is what he wrote.
Right. But there are different times of his life that he wrote.
He says, you know, the crown prince, this guy,
not doing well.
He's not going to be good.
Yeah.
And indeed, that was borne out.
Uh-huh.
And Shlomo's advisors told Rechavam, you know, mm-hmm. you need to do as the people ask. You're
right.
not making good judgments.
Right.
And he ended up causing the kingdom to be divided.
Right.
And
no, so, I get that. So
they're telling
wrong
his
thing.
Father.
Yeah.
They're telling Shlomo, I'm imagining, you know, your son is...
Right. What are you going to do about this?
What are you going to do about your son? And he's telling his son, you know,
people are asking, yeah.
you. They're bothering me about you in a productive way.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess I hear it a little bit in that context of like, you know, rumblings of the kingdom. But even in that, even within that structure, within that setup, so Shlomo HaMelech's concern should not be what people are asking him. Shlomo HaMelech's concern should be his son is ruining, you know, he's being bad. He's not doing the proper thing. So, yeah, what am I going to answer other people? Fine. More importantly, I've got to deal with, you know, your misguidedness.
These other people are telling me about you, and they have a good point.
Okay, so you're saying that Shlomo HaMelech was taking their words under advisement,
yeah.
and that's what he means about what I'm going to respond to them. Okay, it's a bit of a kinach in the words. I don't see it there. I'll be able to respond to them. But really what I mean is I'll be able to, you know, help you along, which will then help me respond to them, but that's not what I care. I don't care about talking to them. Okay, not sure. But I think in the sense that it might be lo lishma, so the child should at least be aware of the fact that this is something that parents deal with. Whether they should deal with it or not is a different story. Where the parents should be embarrassed or praised because of what their children are doing, or whether the parents should feel the need to be praised or shamed, you know, for what their child is doing, that's almost irrelevant from the child's perspective. That's happening. That is happening. And the child should, if that helps motivate the child, so then Gesundheiten, probably back then it definitely did. And today obviously does. But again, I'm not seeing this as a lishma pasuk. I'm seeing this as a low lishma pasuk. This is not getting to the core of the issue. This is more about an ancillary concern. What am I going to talk to, you know, what am I going to tell the people around me? The next pasuk is, there are two ways to understand at least the beginning of it and then also the end of it, but at least the beginning of it. Arum, as we've seen many times in Mishlei, doesn't mean naked. It means cunning. Arum, ra'a, nistar. So that last word nistar is debated amongst the mefarshim here. It either could be nistar, meaning concealed, going back on the word ra'a, meaning evil. The evil is concealed, or arum ra'a, a cunning person sees ra'a, an evil influence, let's say, and then that person is nistar. That person hides themselves. Right, if a person's walking alongside, you know, walking on the sidewalk and sees something bad happening, so they'll go somewhere else. Right, that's what it's saying. That's one interpretation. Does Rashi say that? Roa Poranios Haba al Haaretz Vinistar Himena. Yeah, he's going to hide. Shemashach Yadu Min Havera, and they will sort of refrain or prevent themselves from engaging with sin. However, Pitaim, what's a peta? Pitaim is like a pesi, is a simple person, right? Like Shomer Pitaim Hashem. Give one second, Aviva. Pitaim Avru Ne'enashu. They will pass by they will not hide, they will pass by, and they will be punished. Meaning that they won't have the same cunningness, the same forethought, or the same insight to see the problem in front of them, and they'll instead pass by and will be punished. Yaviva.
Going back to the Shiva Harfi Davar.
Yeah.
It says Harfi. It doesn't say that I will support you, Harfecha. He's saying that the people are it's a reflection on, yeah,
right,
on
me,
him,
the,
not on.
Right, no, for sure. But I think what Rashi is saying is that it's a reflection on the parents because of the son. Meaning, like, you should wise up because people are shaming me, right? It is the parents' shame. But my point is that shouldn't be the main concern of the parent. Like, the parent should be concerned about his son or daughter doing the right thing, not about what people are saying. You know, what are people going to say when my son does X, Y, or Z? You know, that's the part that doesn't sit well with me. Either way, so back to this pasuk Yabez, Arum Ra'ab Nistar. It could either be that a cunning person sees the impending danger and therefore hides himself. I thought when I first read the pasuk Arum Ra'ab Nistar that the cunning person will see, right, almost like a Roas Hanolad thing, the cunning person will see even that which is hidden, even that which you can't see clearly. Like if the Mitzudas David doesn't say this explicitly, but the Mitzudas David says, Kishera ha'arum hara'a ha'me'utedet lavo, right, that which is coming in the future. So then Nistar Mimena, even the Mitzudas David says like Rashi, that's referring to hiding oneself from that eventuality. But I thought to say that that's sort of like, you know, that's the obvious part of the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't have to say that. What it's saying here is the Arum, the cunning one, Ra'anistar, they'll be able to see even evils which are hidden, as most, you know, evil influences are, right? It's not always that clear and obvious that something bad is coming. It takes a certain cunning and a certain insight to see what's happening. However, Pitzaim Avru, the simpletons will just pass right by. They won't see it coming, and therefore Ne'enashu. And therefore, they will be punished.
So is there a connection between 11 and 12, or is it just random?
Yeah, as sometimes there are connections, sometimes there aren't. The Vilna Gaon is famous for trying to make connections. I have no notes here from the Vilna Gaon, so I can't tell you. You know, I think there could be connections. I mean, most of Mishlei is all just talking about discipline and you know, character development. So you can make a sort of a generic connection there. I don't see any explicit connection between parent to child. It's that kind of thing. You could maybe say to, you know, this is part of what the parent is saying to the child, you know, wise up, make sure you're more cunning, make sure you see what's coming, like that's how, but I don't see how you really connect it. Either way, the Mitzudas David says, right, the Mitzudas David is saying to the child maybe, or he's saying to us, you know, be careful from something evil before it comes. You know, I don't know if people are familiar with this concept. I learned about this concept from from Daniel Pink. Daniel Pink has a book called When, and he has a concept there, a beautiful concept, which is not always easy to remember to do it, but he has a concept called, for businesses, called pre-mortems, as opposed to post-mortems, you pre-mortems. And you say to yourself, you say to your team, okay, this is the project, we're ready to go. If this project doesn't work, why will it not have worked? It's like a weird thing to do, but like, let's fast forward 2 weeks from now, and the project didn't work. So what are we going to say in 2 weeks from now for why the project didn't work? Who can guess? Who can predict what's going to be our, you know, fatal flaw? What's that? I remember in Hamlet we called that the hamartia. David, is that a word? Hamartia. Hamartia. You familiar with the word hamartia? Anyways, we used to say that Hamlet Tamarsha was his hubris. His fatal flaw was the fact that he was too, whatever. Anyways, so what's the pre-mortem, right? You make a pre-mortem. So this is what Mitzudas David is saying, that Arum Ra'a Nistar, I'm still explaining it in this way, that it doesn't refer to the guy hiding, cause I don't like hiding from your problems, but the issue is Nistar. And And I'll even go as far as to say that sometimes we know the problem's coming, but we hide it from ourselves, right? We almost conceal it, and we don't want to deal with it. You know, I do this all the time. You know, You know, I know that in 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have to make a special class. You know, I know that December 25th is coming, and then January 1st is coming, and I know I'm going to have to do a lot of research for my legal holiday classes. Okay, but I don't have to do it yet. And I'll be nistar from it. I'll make it hidden, right? So if I was really a room, this really has to do more with discipline than it has to do with, you know, perspective. But if I was really cunning and I really understood that that's going to put me in a time crunch if I don't properly prepare beforehand, so then it will creep up on me. And p'taim avruv ne'anashu, ultimately acting as a simpleton and making it hidden from me is going to hurt me in the end, punish me in the end. The truth is that I tried to do this a few weeks ago to prepare. It's so hard because you kind of have to it's almost like, I don't know, the good analogies, sports analogies creep into my head if you're like a running back, you can see all these different ways you could run. That's what it's like trying to prepare those classes. It's like, okay, I got 5 different books of American Jewish history, and I have all these things I could look into, and I just have to decide one and then hit the hole, go right there, and just dig deep. So that's my problem. It's not always a time issue, but that's in whatever situation it is. Sometimes maybe it's, I know a kid is coming is visiting for this vacation, and I don't have, you know, their favorite food. So, and I pushed it off and I pushed it off. I have a project at work that I've been pushing it off. And the arum, the cunning person, is able, not only able, but is willing to do something about it. He sees it and does something about it. Sees the hidden problem that's coming up and says, okay, I'm going to take care of it before it comes and overtakes me. Yeah, Viva.
This is sort of pushing it, but away from a personal level, but
okay.
In a way, it's sort of been hints like what's happened in Israel now.
Oh, okay.
Was,
you're saying because they should have seen it coming.
There were signs and
right.
It wasn't.
Right. Hindsight is always 20/20, but there were certainly signs. And as Israel, we expect them to have better foresight with that kind of stuff, for sure. Yeah. And I, to their credit, you know, it's hard to say to their credit after something like that happens. This happened many other times where they have forestalled, right? They've seen it coming and they've stopped it, and they've avoided it in one way or another. This time, unbelievably, they didn't see it. But yeah, so Arum Ra'a Ra'a Nistar. If you're really cunning, you'll see it. And the Pasuk says Nistar, meaning you hide, according to Rashi and Mitzvah David. Alternatively, it's the real cunning person is the one who's able to see the hidden thing, the thing that's coming that you don't see coming yet. As opposed to the simpleton, it's going to come, it's going to pass you by, and you're going to be punished by it. An interesting pasuk here, this sounds a lot like Baba Kama or Baba Metzia. Kach bigdo ki arav zar uva'ad nachriya chavlehu. Take the clothing of a strange guarantor. Ki arav zar means when someone acts as guarantor to a stranger, meaning I see this as a someone is I see this as like a
like collateral.
Yeah, no, you take a collateral from someone who's guaranteeing a stranger, meaning like usually a guarantor is like a family member, right? Your father. I think everyone needs a guarantor that first time. I think my father-in-law was the guarantor on our first rental apartment in Washington Heights. Because, you know, we didn't have much credit. We had some, but, you know, a 23-year-old getting his first apartment, you know, I don't have any income. I don't have a job. You know, Ricky's got a part-time thing. I've got some money, whatever, wedding money. And they don't trust us, right? So you got a guarantor. So who's your guarantor? The guarantor is usually a parent, someone who's not only able but also willing to help out if things come to the Baruch Hashem. Never needed that, Leon Hard. But if you have a guarantor who's not a father-in-law, not a parent, not a family member, not a close friend, is a stranger, so you better get collateral on that guy. Because even though guarantors are meant to pay up when things come due, if this guy doesn't really care about the person he's guaranteeing, let's say he's a bank or a mortgage company or something like that, they don't really care about this guy. And you're worried that in the end of the day, they're going to throw them under the bus and say no thanks, so that because they're not family, they're not friends, they're not somebody you care that they care about. In which case, so what's going to be your guarantee that you're going to get your money back? So you got to take a collateral. Kach bigdo. Bigdo is literally talking about clothing, whatever that loan is. So it's going to be sort of relevant or value based to take that. Ki arav zar. When the stranger or when someone is a guarantor for a stranger, uba'ad nachriya, I don't think that's referring to a non-Jew, I think it's referring to a foreigner, chavlehu is also a kind of, I think it also means a kind of collateral. Yeah, I think they're both collaterals. Let me just see here. Mitzudah Sion says chavlehu is also a mashkon. Similar word in Mishpatim when it says it originally too. Other Mishnasa Arev Gorim Shamar Hadayin Lamal VeKach Bigdo. Adam Shnasa Arev Gorim Shamar Hadayin Lamal VeKach Bigdo. Okay, I don't know why Rashi says it that way. It's an interesting way to say it. And Suda David says Kach Beged HaArev LaMashkon VeLo TaAshim BeZeh. So it's an interesting. What is the muster here from Shlomo Melech? Right, Shlomo Melech almost always in these psukim is trying to teach us a lesson. What's the lesson here? I think the lesson here is first of all, the way the Mitzvah David says it. Well, so that's an interesting point because I think Rashi talks about that is referencing that. The Mitzvah David is not talking about this. The Mitzvah David is talking about how I thought it was, which is, if you're somebody who's trying to adjudicate this loan, you're sort of like the third party. So, or you're the lender. Make sure the pasuk Shlomo Melech is saying, make sure you take a collateral from that guy. Make sure not talking to the guarantor and saying don't do that, but make sure as the lender you get a collateral. That's how I thought about it. And so you right whenever someone gives you mussar, there's usually some kind of preconceived notion that they're trying to preempt or to overcome or to make you aware of, right? So, for instance, I wouldn't say I wouldn't say David, make sure that you wear your glasses. Of course, David knows it. Like that's not like a there's no novel muster for me to tell that to David. So there's got to be something which is something David wouldn't know that I'm talking. So what is the thing that we wouldn't know? So according to Mitzvah David says, or the Mitzvah David implies, "V'lo ta'ashem b'zeh" is an interesting word. The Mitzvah David says, don't feel shame about asking for a collateral. So that makes me think, what do you mean don't feel shame? I think sometimes people feel like they're insulting another person if you use the normal course of business, right? Sometimes, so for instance, you're talking to a scholar and resident. You don't talk to scholar and resident. I'm only talking to you about me, right? Scholar and residents, right? So I spoke a few months ago. I wanted a certain scholar and resident, a colleague of mine who's made it big in the psychology world and in therapist world. And I said, I would love for you to come to our shul. And I always make this mistake. I should always probably preempt with like, this is what we can afford. But then I always get into conversation. Same thing happens every time. We get in conversation. Nobody wants to talk money yet. So we're just sort of like imagining what this is going to look. And then eventually I say, well, what's your fee? And he says something crazy, like $6,000. Like it's not in our budget. It's just not. And I said, look, we'd love to have you. I'm not even going to counter that offer. We can't even come close to that. It's just not. But at the same time, it's like one of those things where like they feel bad and then I feel bad. And it's like, okay, fine, I'm sorry to have talked to you. But the truth is, it's just business. That's just business, right? So I think Mitzvah David is here saying like sometimes you come to a person, you're lending them money. You want to be a nice guy. And the guy says, okay, thank you for this money. Mir Hashem, I'll pay you back. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Don't worry about it. It's kind of a lot of money. Can I have your really nice watch as a collateral? Like, whoa, I thought you trusted me. Like, what? I thought you were friends. Right? Why are you? But that's just business. That's just, you know, that's contract negotiation. I'm sure David's very familiar with it, right? When I went through contract negotiations here for the shul, David was very kind, very flexible. The shul, and the best policy is just clarity. This is what we have. This is what we can afford. This is what we want. You tell us what you want, and hopefully we can make something work out. And yes, are there clauses in contracts that are very uncomfortable? Of course there are. That's business. That's just how business works, and it shouldn't be taken personally. So I think that's what Mr. Stevens is saying here. Al ta shame, though. Don't feel any shame for asking for collaterals.
As they say, and people post signs in the stores, or maybe used to.
Yeah.
People come and ask for something on credit. In God we trust, all others pay cash.
That's good. Yeah, I never saw that. That's good. So yeah, so that I think that's what Mr. Stevens like. Don't be so afraid of using proper collateral. And I think it's even somewhat instructive in terms of a person's own blind spots. Like, don't be so blind into thinking, oh, no, I can trust this guy. Because some things happen. And maybe this guy is not going to, but 1 out of 10 cases, it's going to happen. And you better have something in a contract. It's uncomfortable, but that's what Shlomo Melech is saying. Don't. Yeah, you end up with Judge Judy. That's right. I love Judge Judy. I should watch that again. I haven't seen it in a long time.
See, I love it.
I love Judge Judy. I appreciate it just for like you're right, the straight shooter. I just find, and increasingly so, people are unwilling to talk about difficult things. Mm-hmm. And you have to get in front of a judge to actually say the truth. You know, she squeezes it out of you. Unfortunately, you find it in couples all the time. They're not even willing to talk to each other about what's uncomfortable about the other one. And then things lead to another. And ultimately, why do you have to go to a therapist? Just because they can't talk to each other. Not because it's some insurmountable thing. Now it's become an insurmountable thing. But they literally don't talk to each other about the most difficult things. So here, yeah.
Somebody that we knew well told me a story that really shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
Said that she and her late husband had lent a friend, a close friend,
yeah,
somebody else was
right
in the community, $25,000. Never paid them back.
Aye.
And they got nothing in writing.
You can't do anything with that.
You can't.
Just
you can't,
stuck.
You can't do that. You just can't
right.
do that.
Yeah, you gotta have. Yeah, to that's tough. It. That's tough. Yeah. So that's what Mr. David is saying here. Al ta shame. Don't be lo ta shame bezeh. Don't be shame, you know, don't feel any shame in that. There's no shame in making sure that you're protected when it comes to these business deals. So that's what it kach bigdo ki arav zar. Make sure to take a collateral when there's a guarantor who's guaranteeing for someone who's a foreigner. I don't know the difference between a zar and a nachriya in this case. I'm sure, you know, the malvim goes through it. Mivarech re'eu b'kol gadol b'boker hashkeim klala techashiv lo. I find this pasuk to be fascinating. Mivarech re'eu, someone who blesses or praises a friend, someone who praises their fellow man. B'kol gadol is a very interesting phrase. B'kol gadol means you're not hiding it at all. You want everybody to know. This is not like, you know, a text message, hey, you did great today. It's like, this guy is the best, whatever, right? You are praising Bekol Gadol. And Baboker Hashkem is also an interesting phrase. You're doing it in the morning. Baboker Hashkem. When people wake up. How do you translate it?
Getting up early to do this.
You're praising so someone to get up early.
You're so enthusiastic to do this, you get right. up early to.
So says Shlomo HaMelech, klala techashiv lo. This will be considered a curse.
Because it's like embarrassing.
Okay, I think there are a lot of interpretations. What do you want to say? You're embarrassing them?
Yeah.
The person that's being praised is embarrassed?
Yeah.
It's like,
that is obviously
like you're overdoing it. Like, I'm not that great. That's what you're saying? Okay.
If anything goes sour, it's kind of like the Lazarus. If anything goes sour, you just... Everybody feels
so interesting. Klala techashev lo, you're saying it's going to be bad in the future. It's not bad. The praising is not bad, but it's going to look bad retrospectively.
If
this guy is not
a guy who
right.
For,
oh, we should definitely hire this guy. I've known him for many years. He's great with business. His name's Bernie Madoff or something. You've heard of him, right? I know this guy. You can trust him. Give him all your money.
Never known off with anybody.
Anyway, right. Yeah, exactly. So, like, don't praise him too. Never praise. So, the first part is the kol gadol. I think that's what you're getting at. Don't praise people too loudly. Right? Always be a little more, you know, balanced with your praise. But I think there's something to baboker hashkem. Baboker hashkem meaning don't do it in the morning. What does the morning represent? I think the morning, first of all, represents a possible interpretation is that nothing's happened yet. Baboker hashkem could be a reference to the fact that this guy hasn't really proven himself. It's still early in the day, right? Don't praise the guy when the first thing he does is good. It's like, oh, wow, I didn't know you were so good at this. Whoa. It's 9 a.m., right? Let's wait till 2 p.m. to at least see that to try him out a little bit. I think there's a message in there. I think another thing is baboker hashkem, that if you do it already in the morning, so as David's saying, so who knows, you know, what could happen later, but also...
What do you do the rest of the day?
Oh, so good. So this actually is in a footnote. The art scroll has a footnote here, quoting the Toldos Yaakov Yosef. I don't know if the Toldos Yaakov Yosef was... Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polonia. I believe he was, for a long time, considered to be the main student of the Baal Shem Tov, until somehow the Maggid of Mezrich came along and stole that title. There are some interesting historical analyses about whether or not he was salty about that. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef has a compilation of the Baal Shem Tov and his students' ideas. And if you were to ask me who's the main student of the Baal Shem Tov, it's obviously the Maggid of Mezrich. He sort of took over. Everyone knows that. And yet, in the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, a contemporary, and within the inner circle, with the Maggid of Mezrich, in his whole compilation of commentaries, never once mentions the Maggid of Mezrich. So either there's some kind of historical inconsistency, right, who he was, who the Maggid was, whatever, or there was something going on there.
I've heard exactly what you've heard.
You've heard that?
Something going on. The Maggid of Mezrich may have been as much a rival of the Baal Shem Tov.
You think so? Okay, interesting.
I don't know the...
He quotes the Baal Shem, so I don't...
Okay, I don't have to give you my own personal opinions.
Yeah.
I've just heard that, he may have been very happy to take over for the Baal Shem Tov.
Right.
He was
looking for that job.
He was
seeking it out. Okay.
Was,
interesting. Either way, so that's a total document.
More than just a loyal, faithful follower.
Right. Not just I'll do whatever you say kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, so there are different versions of that, and not obviously, but sometimes you can't ask Hasidim for the real history there because they're too close to it. But homiletically, it says in the footnote here from the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, homiletically, someone who has achieved growth in Torah and good deeds should realize from the start, early in the morning, before his friends praise him, that such praise could harm him. Which is a fascinating reading of the Pesukim. Not even if we're interpreting it homiletically, but even if not homiletically, maybe the Pasuk means Mivarech Re'ehu Bekol Gadol could mean, and this is a drasha, this is not really a drasha, but it's a different way of understanding the Pasuk. It's not that you are the one praising, but that if you are being praised by a friend, Mivarech Re'ehu, if a friend praises, who's a friend praising? You. If a friend praises you, Bekol Gadol Baboker Hashkem. If they're praising you early, Baboker Hashkem. What's that word, Hashkem? Hashkem typically is an instructive, right? Hashkem, wake up, or get up earlier. Baboker Hashkem, get up earlier before their praise, meaning preempt anyone else's praise, because klala techashev lo. What's lo? Consider that praise as a curse. What does that mean, that praise as a curse?
Goes to your head.
Right, that such praise could harm him because it could make him proud and complacent and make him think that there is no need to strive for more improvement. This is something that Carol Dweck bangs the drum very hard on. Some people afterwards, disagree with her, but Carol Dweck in her groundbreaking book called Mindset, where she talks about the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is... having the thought that you are who you are, and, if anything happens, it's a reflection of who you are, and if you ever do something good, it's a reflection of who you are, and you're never going to change. The growth mindset is, even if you do something wrong, you can be better. And even if you do something good, you could always be better, right? So you're always growing, as opposed to seeing yourself as a stagnant, being, my IQ is this, and that's who I am, right? See? So so in that context, she talks about, I think it was a study that she did, that when you're teaching children, and let's say they do well on math. I'm very careful with this with my kids. Ricky, you know, disagrees with the whole method. So see, she's not as adamant about it. But let's say your kid draws a beautiful picture. So how do you respond to that? So you could say, wow, you are such an artist, right? A lot of people say it. You're such an artist, right? You're a great painter. So you're saying that to a kid who's now, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 or whatever. And what does the kid compute? The kid computes, that's who I am. I'm a great painter. So what's going to happen in 2 weeks in art class when they paint and it's not so good? And the teacher says, oh, that's, you know, you could do better. So whoa. I'm a painter. I'm an artist. How dare you say that about me? So instead of taking that criticism and getting better, they're going to deny the criticism, get angry about it, and, you know, be less willing to accept criticism. Instead, says Carol Dweck, again, people disagree with it. Instead, says Carol Dweck, you shouldn't say to your child, you are an artist, you're a great painter. You should say, wow, you drew that so nicely. Right? Because what does that do? That means what you did, you did well. That doesn't mean you always do well. But it's not. It also doesn't define who you are. It doesn't identify you as that person. And then the next time, like, oh, last time I drew a painting, I did well. I want to do well again, right? It's not like I can rest on my laurels because last time, because my parent didn't praise what I did, what I was last time. He praised what I did last time. This also connects back to things I've talked about being versus doing. But we don't have to get into all the thing. I think that's what this Toldos Rav Yosef is saying from this pasuk. Get up earlier than the praise comes. Realize that the praise might come, and do not interpret it to be, you know, in that fixed mindset. Rather, recognize that it could be detrimental to you if you take it too much to heart. If someone says to you, oh, you did great. Now, this gets very complicated, and it all depends on personality type. There's another concern, which is called imposter syndrome, which I think you have to worry about this also, which is pretty self-explanatory. I don't have to explain it. But many, many people, especially today with Facebook and social media and all that stuff, suffer from imposter syndrome. Self-inflicted or even, you know, just naturally from what they see around them, they feel like they're not as good as what people are saying about them, right? You know, people come to me, Rabbi, that was a great drasha. Could have done better. You know, I love your coat. How many of us do this, right? I love your sweater. Oh, this, I got it from, it was a hand-me-down. You know, I got it from a friend. Oh, this, it's not so special, right? We always sort of like, shoo away our compliments. Right? So that, I think, is the flip side of this. It could be a bad thing also if you curse too much, right? If you curse the praise too much, so it also could be a bad thing.
I see something in here, but
yeah.
Don't be too obsequious.
Don't be too much
of a Tony. I mean, you...
Oh, you're saying like flattery.
You don't overdo your flattery.
Good. Obsequious. Obsequious?
That was one of the words I had in studying for SAT.
You remember that?
Remember.
Obsequious. That was not on my SAT.
You know, it's
yeah.
This is gonna.
It's a bad quality. Well, you're still talking practically in terms of the future.
I'm talking about the guy. He just wants to pour praise on. He's trying to
butter them up or
to the person, and he. You know, he's so enthusiastic. He gets up in the morning.
Right, right. I hear that.
Doing it first thing in the morning.
Right, that's all he does.
In the morning.
Right, he gets up and he's one of those people that just compliments everybody all the time.
Right.
And I think there is something to that. Not in terms of utilitarian, not just in terms of utilitarian, which is what you're saying. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows why he's doing it? That kind of thing. But also because if you praise everybody, then you're praising nobody. Right. If everybody's the best, so then nobody's the best. Right. This what's that movie? Incredibles. And people know the Incredibles. So there's a villain there called, I don't know what the guy's name is. Something with a Z. I don't remember. So he has a line there where he's very like jealous of the Incredibles. So instead, he becomes this mad scientist and he makes all these inventions and whatever. I haven't watched the movie in a long time, but he's a great marshal. And the guy says to. Right, and I don't know what it was. Like they stopped playing with him when he was a little kid or something, and he, you know, whatever. So when he gets older, and the Incredibles now with all their natural born powers are meeting this guy, and, you know, he's trying to bring them down or whatever, and say, why are you doing all of this? And he says, because you guys were always special. I want to make it so that everybody's special. Because if everybody's special, then nobody is. So that's his big message, right? If everybody's special, then nobody is. I have a lot of kashas on that because it's not true, right? Because even if everybody's special, everyone's special in their own ways. So like, you can fly. I can't fly. You can. Well, so that itself doesn't make any sense. I think I spoke about that one, Kain and Hevel, you know, because they're comparing each other, but they could be great in their own ways. Anyways, the point here is that if everybody is the best, if that guy is great and this guy is great and she's the best writer and she's also the best writer, well, then all your compliments, klala tichashev lo, it's just they're vacuous. They're empty. They're empty compliments. They don't mean anything. So that's take klala tichashev lo. Again, the word lo is so ripe with homiletics there. The word lo could apply to three different things: the compliment, the person, or the person being complimented. Right? The word lo, klala tichashev lo, is such a wonderful little word that, you know, sometimes you hear the phrase like, you know, shivim panim lator, and you're like, yeah, really? But then you read psukim like this, and it's like, yeah, definitely. Shlomo HaMelech could have been more specific, but he doesn't want to be, because the word lo can apply in all three variables of this pasuk, and therefore we have a lot more to learn. The word lo, right? It's a curse to him or to it or to him, the other person. So that's another one that maybe the compliment means nothing if you say it to everybody. Let's do one more. Delef Torade Bion. Oh, not the best pasuk for women in the crowd, but Delef Torade Biyom Sagrir, if a drip is similar to a drip on a, what is this, a Sagrir is a rainy day, like a day that you have to be inside, like Sagor, like you're pent up inside. A drip on a day that you're inside, Ve'eshes Midyanim Nishtava. Similar is a wife who is quarrelsome. Is that how it says it? Quarrelsome? Midyanim is like someone who fights, like a din, like always fighting with you. What do you have? Midonim. Oh, the word is spelled midonim. Unclear why it's spelled that way. What the drasha is.
Okay, this is the
Kree Ksiv,
the
yeah.
Kree
yeah.
Old fashioned,
the Kree is way far away, so you don't know what it is yet. Yeah, ve'eshes midyanim nishtava. So a woman of contention. So what is the issue here? So what is a delef torad biyom sagra? We know what the contentious wife might be, you know, lo aleinu. But delef torad biyom sagra is going to define for us, or is going to be a symbol for us about what a contentious wife could be. So if you look at one word to look at the Mitzvah stuff, it says, Hine tiptup hamatar lo yatrid b'nei habayis, ki im biyom bo hamatar asher derech b'nei adam lios niskarim zoch habayis. The drip of the rain is not really a problem generally, unless you're home that day. Ki az yitaftef hamatar el habayis, because then it's going to, you know, drip slowly on the, what's that thing called? Japanese water torture? You ever heard of that? Like a slow drip, right? A slow drip can be very frustrating. But if there's no rain, then there's no rain, there's no drip, there's no bothersome. But a woman who is contentious is like a constant drip. You know, you ever try? We have an ensuite bathroom, very small. Whatever. Smallest bathroom I've ever had. Actually, might not be true. Either way, it's a small bathroom, but we have a shower in there. And for whatever reason, it's very hard to shut it off all the way. And it drips, right? If, you know, every 4 seconds, every 10 seconds, whatever. And sometimes if I'm in like a very irritable mood, I can't sleep with that drip. I just can't. And I'll get up in the middle of the night and I will pull down that shower lever until that thing goes away. Because I just can't fall asleep with it. So that's what I'm thinking of when I hear the Shlomo Melech. One of those consistent drips when you're stuck in the house, when you're stuck in that room, you just have to listen to that drip over and over and over. So that's like really frustrating. Just like a wife who is constantly contentious, constantly, you know, badgering you, constantly causing issues. So that's what it feels like. Okay, I think this is not relevant for us because hopefully we can deal with it. Interestingly enough, this is not really one of those action items, right? Something that we've seen before are sort of action items, right? Make sure to take the lateral. Make sure to the collateral. Make sure to be wiser, son. Make sure to be cunning when you see the things coming. Make sure not to take compliments too much. This one is like, oh, by the way, a bad wife is like a drip. So, well, what am I supposed to do with that? How am I supposed to deal with that? So, obviously, you can make your own conclusions. Maybe it means just like you should fix the leak, you should fix the wife. I don't know. I have no idea. I really don't know what the action item is here. Maybe it means he's got to get outside. And he's got to sort of have some alone time, from the wife and make things, smooth things over a little bit. I really, really don't know what the action item is because the Shlomo Melech doesn't tell us. Yeah, you have something? Okay.
That a quarrelsome woman will drive her husband out of the house like dripping rain. Dripping in the house will drive you out of the house.
Okay.
Maybe the action.
It doesn't say that in mine, does it?
Don't be this way.
Don't do that. Yeah. There's an old SNL skit that they show us in social work school about the woman who goes to a therapist and starts telling the therapist all of her problems. The therapist looks at her and just goes, okay, don't do that. Yeah, but I'm really sad. Okay, don't be. Okay, but it's really bothering me. Okay, don't bother you. It's like, what am I supposed to do? Yeah. So like, don't be like that, but like sometimes easier said than done. So I don't know what the action item is. I think maybe, in my own, psychological way of understanding things. So then sometimes things are bothering us. We don't understand why. Right? I don't know. It doesn't happen that often, but sometimes we're like on edge. We don't understand why. And then we realize like, oh my gosh, there's like a drip. And it's been like playing in the background of everything I do, and it's been bothering me, and I never even took notice of it. So sometimes maybe a person could, they're at work, and they get to work every day, and they're always in such a grumpy mood. And maybe it's because they've been fighting with their wife every morning about the same thing, right? So maybe it's just sort of like a take notice of the little drips in your life. Like, take notice of the little things that are bothering you that maybe you're not paying attention to.
Like an effective security alarm.
Yes, I was thinking that also. In the middle of Shemona Esrei, what is distracting me? It's that alarm. Okay, so maybe just make a little bit more conscientious perspective towards the little things in life that might be bothering you and setting your mood astray. Okay, thank you again to Sarah Morris for sponsoring tonight's Bate Medrash classes. Yes, Hashem will continue next week with more Mishlei. Everyone should be well.
Excuse me, Rabbi.